In my humble opinion, a sermon is not to be about the dispensation of information. A little bit, but that's not the goal. But as I was preparing, a little preface here, as I was preparing to write this sermon, it occurred to me that there was an awful lot about something I should know that I knew very little of, and a lot of what I thought I knew, I didn't understand properly. You're following me. So this sermon will include some information about our church, which you probably, each and every one of you, know inherently and by heart. But on the slight chance that we haven't all been keeping up with the Anglican Journal and other important news carriers, please have patience with me. Initially, the world's largest and tallest buildings at 1,368 and 1,362 feet, I haven't lost my mind, 110 stories each, climbing more than 100 feet above the Empire State Building's silver mast and embedded in bedrock 70 feet deep. New York's Twin Towers were an architectural marvel. Each boasted 224 steel columns set a mere 22 inches apart to form a strong, rigid structure, extensively tested to withstand wind and air pressure, fire, earthquake, and yes, airplanes. The gleaming towers were permanence personified. If someone had told you they were going to fall, you may well have scoffed, as I would. Exactly what Jesus' listeners probably did when he said the temple was going to fall. Part Parliament building, part pyramids, part Statue of Liberty, Judaism's temple was a symbol of God's blessing and the might and right of the Hebrew nation. Like the towers, what could possibly be more secure, more dependable, more certain to stand forever? Our gospel, recounting the collapse and end of this ancient sacred edifice, is very fitting as Christians everywhere approach the end of another church year. The calendar reveals the constant and universal nature of alteration and change. Change sometimes wanted, and sometimes not wanted at all. In this month approaching winter, summer and its lush vegetation, its outdoor barbecues and energizing sunshine is becoming a fading memory. The darkness grows outside by the hour till the winter solstice on December 22nd. And isn't there a bit, honestly now, a bit of darkness inside here as well? A kind of dis-ease about all that's happening in the world. A lot of folks dislike change, maybe even most of us. Which brings to mind a little witticism I love that seems to capture this quite well. It's phrased in the form of a question. You may have heard me say it. I'm going to say it again anyway. Do you know how many Anglicans it takes to change a light bulb? It takes five. I'll use this hand, it's better. Five. One to actually change the bulb, and four to talk about how great the old one was. There's something near and dear to us that is also notably changing. our Anglican Church of Canada. Many of us are old enough to remember the good old days. Full pews, packed Sunday schools, halls brimming with life. St. Philip's Anglican in Vancouver, where I served my first 3 years as priest, had, I'm told, around 1,000 children in its Sunday schools, and that's schools with an S, taught by over 100 parishioner teachers. And I've seen actual photographs of parishioner lines stretching down 27th Avenue to Dunbar Street and around the corner, with folks waiting for one service to end to be able to enter the next. And baptisms, they were processed on almost an industrial scale, often with not a lot of preparation. In those good old days, churches had money for programs and outreach, and parishes were pretty much the center of social life. St. Philip's had a two-lane, five-pen bowling alley, of all things, underneath the church hall that the whole community loved. And I have no doubt that St. John's enjoyed an equally similar, vigorous life, until we progressively didn't and don't. And while the church has been changing, so has the world, of course. Who'd have thought 20 years ago that folks would attend church online? But that's life, isn't it? Like a river, it's moving always. In 500 BCE, the Greek philosopher Heraclitus declared, "Life is flux." Like a river, the very nature of life is change. You can't stand in the same water for more than a second. And to ignore or to resist this natural flow is really to resist the natural flow of life. The only thing permanent in life is... Come on, you can speak out. Change! We remember our mother's teaching, don't we? When Luke wrote today's gospel story, that massive temple of boulders and gold had been gone about two decades. Their precious building and the bureaucracy that sustained it, life as they'd known it, was a memory. But as apocalyptic as Luke's words might sound, they are not meant to cause us alarm, as they weren't written to frighten the community to which Luke wrote, nor to frighten us. Rather, they're words of comfort and words of hope to people feeling maybe a little bit adrift. Like some of us who fear the church, and I mean Christian church in general, not just Anglican Church of Canada, but who fear the church with its aging buildings and dwindling resources may be heading for the rocks. But this is God's church, not yours or mine. And God is not finished with us yet. The best is yet to come, and outside of the proclamation of God's saving grace and salvation, I will never be speaking better news to a congregation than I'm going to share with you this morning. So get excited. After decades of faithful but, admit it, rather fruitless efforts by all levels of the church to get back on course, after hair-pulling struggles by countless diocesan and national synods, church officials, and even hired professional consultants, not to mention the blood, sweat, and tears of individual parishes in the hundreds. Those rocks have just kept getting closer, haven't they? Till now. 2 years ago, a mere 2 years, 2023, something really monumental began to happen. You may have read about it in the Anglican Journal. A little bit this month of November, but an awful lot in October. Archbishop Linda Nichols initiated a commission or a committee. Now, when I was in seminary, one of my theologue friends had a banner on her door that said, God so loved the world that she didn't send a committee or a commission. But this one we really needed. Linda Nichols initiated a commission to make our church really relevant to the spiritual, the social, and the environmental concerns of both right now and all the tomorrows to come. And these are its directions. Drum roll. They're going to ask what is needed now at the national level. I'm not speaking now about parishes. That's later. What is needed at the national level in this 21st century to effectively proclaim the good news in sustainable and life-giving ways? That's number one. There will not be a test. Number two, the commission is going to chart a path to transform General Synod itself. Now, General Synod, as you probably know, is like Parliament. It's the church's national governing body. And this transformation of General Synod is going to look into and include reducing costs and reshaping its way too large and way too top-heavy structure. Already my mind is beginning to flit. It is so incredible. And number three, we will dismantle colonialism and honor our ongoing journey with the sacred circle. Now, I've been asking people before the sermon this morning if they understood what the sacred circle was, and I really didn't before I prepared for this sermon. And most of them didn't really have much of a clue. The sacred circle is a model of representation for something that we might not even realize is actually existent, an indigenous Anglican church. Beside the Anglican Church of Canada, this is the indigenous Anglican Church of Canada, and the sacred circle is their form of synod. Sacred circle has been going on since 1988, and I admit with some embarrassment, I did not know that. And it's believed this sacred circle, which includes council meetings and consensus, and rather than thousands and thousands of pages of motions and referendums and all that, it will be a model of representation that reflects indigenous culture way better than General Synod's bishop-led system ever could. That's exciting, isn't it? After 2 years of consultations, that's from 2023, with Anglicans coast to coast, done with a sense of prophetic imagination, urgency, a refusal to ignore difficult conversations, and an invitation to embrace provocative risk-taking ideas, and a refusal to be limited by the way things have always been done, the commission gave General Synod its report. And this absolutely rocks my mind. It's called Reimagining the Church. Now think, reimagining the church. proclaiming the gospel in the 21st century. And it was enthusiastically and overwhelmingly approved at General Synod. That was just last June. And I tell you, this strategic plan is unlike anything I think we've ever seen. It has the potential to create in our beloved Anglican Church of Canada a vision that is captured in Marty Hagen's lovely song, "Gather Us In." As he says, "Here in this place, new light is streaming. Now is the darkness vanishing away. Not in the dark of buildings confining, not in some heaven light years away, but here in this place, new light is shining. Now is the kingdom, now is the day." In essence, this overwhelmingly supported directive is asking, and this is amazing for any human being to consider regarding something that has been around for several hundred years. If we were to create the General Synod today, what would we create? And I simply can't tell you how mind-blowing this is for old clerics like me and Alistair, who've plodded along for years with a hope-filled but ineffective church bureaucracy. So how did this happen? God. Luke's story of the road to Emmaus was considered by the commission not only was and will remain the guiding scriptural narrative for this work. And you remember that. The disciples on the day of resurrection had been fearsome, and the day had been fearsome and confusing, but suddenly, even as the disciples were walking away, the unrecognized Jesus appeared beside them. He reminded them of the path that they were on was created by God and had been traveled by many before them, a path that would welcome generations yet to come. His presence and his words were a promise he would be with them forever to bring clarity to confusion, courage to fearfulness, and hope to anxiety. From this pivotal meeting, our earliest ancestors in the faith were virtually transformed, and they returned to Jerusalem to faithfully and fearlessly share the good news. What had seemed like the end was instead a true beginning. And so too will our church be transformed. Now, all this is change at the national level. General Synod, the brain, so to speak, that keeps or tries to keep our church's collaborative parts organized and empowered. And it makes sense, doesn't it, that it begins with this? Any systemic change has to begin there so the rest of the body can follow that same positive path. And it's an exciting path of renewal and revitalization, what acting Archbishop Anne Germain called a time of holy and sacred risk-taking, something that most of us don't care for, risk-taking. But the risen Christ walks with us and guides us. And we really, as we heard from the colic this morning and the prayers, we really needn't be afraid. And here again, another parable from Luke's gospel shows this. It's the parable of the wineskins, where Jesus reminds us, and I quote, "No one puts new wine into old wineskins. Otherwise, the new wine will burst the skins and will be spilled, and the skins will be ruined. New wine must be put into new wineskins." We are most certainly in a time of wineskin change. General Synod, the old wineskin, has in all its colonial character and structure tried to guide and empower our church, and for this we should be grateful. Its time, however, has more than passed. Nostalgia for the early and even present Anglican Church of Canada is more than understandable. We like the way things are. Do we really have to change the bulb? But it can't be a barrier to this spirit-inspired and hope-filled vision from God. This new paradigm, reimagining the church, proclaiming the gospel in the 21st century, reminds us that we are indeed, in the rousing words of that song again, called anew to be salt for the earth. Called anew to be salt for the earth. We're on the cusp of a grand new awakening, something I had virtually despaired of, empowering us to share God's love from an increasingly fresh place of strength and hope. God's perfect love casts out fear, so we needn't be afraid. And for this, I'm going to say, Amen.